Chapter 14. The Park Lane Hospital for the Dying was a 60-story tower of primrose tiles. As the savage stepped out of his taxicopter, a convoy of gaily coloured aerial hearses rose whirring from the roof and darted away across the park, westward, bound for the Slough Crematorium. At the lift gates, the presiding porter gave him the information he required, and he dropped down to Ward 81, a galloping senility ward, the porter explained, on the 17th floor. It was a large room bright with sunshine and yellow paint, and containing 20 beds, all occupied. Linda was dying in company and with all the modern conveniences. The air was continuously alive with gay synthetic melodies. At the foot of every bed, confronting its moribund occupant, was a television box. Television was left on, a running tap from morning till night. Every quarter of an hour, the prevailing perfume of the room was automatically changed.
"We try," explained the nurse who had taken charge of the savage at the door, "we try to create a thoroughly pleasant atmosphere here, something between a first-class hotel and a Feely Palace, if you take my meaning."
"Where is she?"
asked the savage, ignoring these polite explanations. The nurse was offended.
"You are in a hurry," she said.
"Is there any hope?" he asked.
"You mean of her not dying?"
He nodded.
"No, of course there isn't. When somebody is sent here, there's no..."
Startled by the expression of distress on his pale face, she suddenly broke off.
"Why, whatever's the matter?" she asked.
She was not accustomed to this kind of thing in visitors. Not that there were many visitors, anyhow, or any reason why there should have been many visitors.
"You're not feeling ill, are you?"
He shook his head.
"She's my mother," he said in a scarcely audible voice.
The nurse glanced at him with startled, horrified eyes, then quickly looked away. From throat to temple, she was all one hot blush.
"Take me to her,"
said the savage, making an effort to speak in an ordinary tone. Still blushing, she led the way down the ward. Faces still fresh and unwithered, for senility galloped so hard that it had no time to age the cheeks, only the heart and brain, turned as they passed. Their progress was followed by the blank, incurious eyes of second infancy. The savage shuddered as he looked. Linda was lying in the last of the long rows of beds, next to the wall. Propped up on pillows, she was watching the semi-finals of the South American Riemann Surface Tennis Championship, which were being played in silent and diminished reproduction on the screen of the television box at the foot of the bed. Hither and thither across the square of illumined glass, the little figures noiselessly darted like fish in an aquarium, the silent but agitated inhabitants of another world. Linda looked on, vaguely and uncomprehendingly smiling. Her pale, bloated face wore an expression of imbecile happiness. Every now and then her eyelids closed, and for a few seconds she seemed to be dozing. Then, with a little start, she would wake up again, wake up to the aquarium antics of the tennis champions, to the Supervox Wurlitzeriana rendering of "Hug Me Till You Drug Me, Honey," to the warm draught of verbena that came blowing through the ventilator above her head, would wake to these things, or rather to a dream of which these things, transformed and embellished by the soma in her blood, were the marvellous constituents, and smile once more her broken and discoloured smile of infantile contentment.
"Well, I must go," said the nurse. "I've got my batch of children coming. Besides, there's number 3.
She pointed up the ward.
"Might go off any minute now. Well, make yourself comfortable."
She walked briskly away.